Blog Talk Radio.
For those genuine and persevering people that we call hockey moms, I dedicate this to you. You're a superior class. When I was young, Oh, no, that's the wrong key, boys. Wait a minute. We'll get her over here. These things happen, you know. This ain't no Milli Vanilli show, just in case you didn't know the difference. When I was young, I do recall, we would go to school in the early fall. But on the days when there was no school, I'd learn to play by a different rule. Get out of that bed, you sleepyhead, my hockey mom would say. Grab your skates and don't be late, there's a hockey game today. And poor old dad was feeling bad because he couldn't come. He'd have to go to work, and so I took my orders from my hockey mom. My hockey mom, she was my chum, my hockey mom. Well, then we drove to the rink in town. I had hit that ice by falling down. Then I'd score for the other team, and you could hear my mom stand up and scream. Get off of that ice, I told you twice to skate the other way. Every year she bent my ear until I learned to play. And then my stick got pretty quick and the puck to me would come. Each time I scored, I knew for sure where the loudest cheer was from. My hockey mom, my hockey mom, my day will come, my hockey mom. And then one day, a stranger came from far away, and he took my name. Very soon, for the NHL, I came to play, and Mom came to yell. Get on that puck and stir things up, show some winning pride. And every time she said that line, I'd bang that puck inside. And here's my dad, all Mr. Glad, he knew this night would come. We're all lined up for the Stanley Cup, and the tears are rolling from my hockey mom. My hockey mom, ain't she the plum? My hockey mom, my hockey mom, forever young, my hockey mom.
Well, that was the late, great Stompin' Tom Connors, who passed away last evening at the age of 77 years. We'll talk a little bit more about Stompin' Tom and the legacy he left behind in this great country of ours a little bit later on. For right now, it is Thursday, March 7th, 2013, and you were listening to Off the Crossbar Live, presented by BackSportsPage.com and, of course, OffTheCrossbar.com. I am your host for the evening, as always, K. Ross Reed, and joining me across from the wooden desk we call a studio, Adam Orson Wells. Adam, how you doing this evening?
Not too bad, sir. Not too bad at all.
Excellent. Excellent. We have got a fantastic show lined up for you today. All kinds of things on the docket. The Chicago Blackhawks are still undefeated. We were wrong about damn near everything we predicted divisionally at the beginning of the season. We're going to talk about some hurt players on the mend and ready to make an impact in the second half of the 2013 lockout shortened season. And as I just mentioned, we will be taking a look back at some of our favorite memories from one of Canada's favorite sons, Stompin' Tom Connors. But now, as every week, it is time to go Off the Crossbar. All right, Adam, so we are back. It is another week. We are at the halfway point of this very short National Hockey League season. How you doing this week, man?
I'm not bad at all, man. Not bad at all. I've thawed out from the adventures of yesterday, and a lot of fun.
The adventures of yesterday.
Yeah.
Anybody not familiar with Adam and I's little mission, we have got a bucket list on the go for 2013. Yesterday was the Polar Bears Club. Hot damn, that water is cold.
Yeah, it was pretty cold, pretty cold. Not something you'd want to go in the middle of the summer.
No, not...
But the middle of winter, why not?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, hey.
Sure.
That's what we do.
Good time. 6 degrees.
You're not Canadian until you've been submerged in an outdoor body of water in the heart of winter.
Yeah.
A shock to the system. Invigorating?
Quite, yeah. Refreshing. It cleans out the system and makes it feel great.
It cleans you out, all right. I damn near had to change my shorts after getting out of that water. All right, anything else exciting on the go for this week? The Men with No Name are on a bye week. We have not been playing much hockey. Potential two-game week next week, looking at maybe back-to-back nights, although the Montreal Canadiens 2013.
Yeah, should be fun. Good to get back on the ice with the boys.
It will be nice. I don't like the two-week delay right before playoffs. It makes me nervous.
No, not
fun. I have a feeling we'll get there, though.
Oh, yeah.
We will be
all right. What else is just a little bit more imminent right now?
Well, that depends on your perspective of imminency, I suppose. As of today, I am, of course, 2 weeks away from our official delivery date, but all signs are pointing to an early delivery of my little ding off the old crossbar. the as-yet-to-be-born Caden Ross-Reed, who will be joining us quite soon on
I'd
this
say
planet.
It's a matter of days, maybe even hours.
Wouldn't it be fantastic if I did not get a chance to finish this broadcast?
That'd be pretty cool.
It would be nice. All right, personal notes aside, we actually do have a very big show on the go for everybody at home this week. But a little bit of sad news to start off. Listen, everybody who plays the game of hockey understands that we play this game that we love, and it comes with a certain amount of inherent risk. And unfortunately for one player in the Swiss Elite League, second tier of the Swiss Elite League yesterday, one of those nightmare scenarios came to fruition. Adam, why don't you tell everybody at home what we're talking about, and we'll have a little bit of a talk about some of the dangers that come with this game, regardless of what level it's played at.
Well, Ronnie Keller was in a playoff game. I can't find the team names. I've forgotten them already. But anyhow, they're rushing into the corner. He's a defenseman going in to play the puck. He sees a man's right on his back, Stefan Schneider, and kind of moves into him.
Tries to stop short a little bit.
Yeah, tries to stop short, but he was still about 5 feet off the boards, and Schneider was just going into him. He did give him the business a bit. He shoved into him a little bit, but he really put him headfirst into the boards. As a result, he's now paraplegic. He received damage to his fourth thoracic vertebrae and is now paralyzed, I think, from the waist.
Yeah, it is. It's they're reporting that it's essentially everything from the chest down. He has been unable to control. And this is a situation that, first off, I would like to just come out on the record as sort of my official off-the-crossbar stance and say that when I watch this play, it is a play that you wish did not happen. And it is a play that certainly falls within the realm of responsibility for the player who threw the hit to have not made that contact. But this was not an exceptionally dirty play.
No.
This was not an exceptionally malicious hit. What we had was two players racing into the end boards. The defenseman, Ronnie Keller, stopped short to initiate contact, as Adam said, about 5 feet off the boards. It looked to me like he stopped a little earlier than he should have. To be perfectly honest with you, what I saw was a North American player stopping short at approximately where the North American boards would have been. I feel like he may have not quite had that perfect sense of where he was on the ice, because I have not seen a lot. I mean, that's just not the right place to make the play he made. And that being said, it certainly was not his fault. The contact should never have been made by the offensive player as well. It's one of those situations that happens a million times over the course of a hockey player's career. And I think what is really important here is not pointing the finger and not laying blame for this. But to take a moment and look at how dangerous this game really is.
Yeah, it is. It is a very dangerous game. I mean, it's an incredibly fast-paced and physical game in which every single time you're on the ice, there is a risk that you can get hurt. I mean, it's just the nature of the game. It's why it's so exciting to watch and fun to play because, you know, giving a guy the business in a way that's not going to end up like that is fun. You know, giving and receiving, it's kind of what the game's about. But, I mean, if what you can read on the internet is true, apparently Keller and Schneider are friends. So
yeah, and that's exactly why. Look, we have played hockey with and against a good number of people, and I can count on one hand and have many fingers left over the number of instances I've genuinely believed that someone was trying to incapacitate another player, was actually displaying an intent to injure. And I don't. Again, as much as I feel like the responsibility has to fall somewhere and you certainly can't throw that hit, this was not a hit that was intended to end a player's career or to even finish a player's game. This was contact, the type of which, as I mentioned, happens a million times. And it's an unfortunate incident. But it does shine some light on the reality that this is a very, very fast, very, very dangerous game. And, you know, we saw the Coletta suspension just a few days ago on a very similar play where he put a cross check into the upper part of Brad Richard's back at approximately the same distance out. And if you ask me, the play from Coletta was a far more dangerous play. It occurred with less speed, but it occurred with more intent. And it's something that we've been seeing quite a bit of now that the sort of clutching and grabbing, the hooking and the obstruction has been removed from the game. We're seeing a lot of players striking those end boards at full speed. And a point that everybody tries to make when they look at National Hockey League play is, do these guys necessarily need touch-up icing, or would no-touch icing solve the issue? This is a clear demonstration of the fact that in European hockey, they do not have one-touch icing. It is all no-touch icing. These plays still happen. And I'm not saying that the NHL should have their icing set up the way they are. I'm just saying that regardless of how safe you make this game, there's an inherent risk that comes with playing.
Of course there is. I don't think, though, that I think that making no-touch icing, you know, of course you're not going to eliminate all the instances of this stuff, but you might seriously reduce the amount of these instances, or at least the situations in which they can occur.
And I do agree with you. For the record, I completely agree that the NHL should move to no-touch icing, but I just feel like this was probably an instance where it wouldn't have even helped.
No, not in this case, absolutely not. But, again, anyway, that's for another day. Anyway, our thoughts and prayers go out to this guy and his family.
Absolutely.
He is conscious. He knows what's going on. He's been told, you know, this is the situation you're now in. I mean, he's 33 years old. He's been playing hockey for a long time. You know, he's in good shape. So maybe, and who knows, you know, miracles can happen, whatever. But in any case, our thoughts go out to him and his friends.
All of our best, absolutely, with him and especially with his family. I mean, listen, there are more important things than hockey. So, Ronnie Keller, if you're out there listening, man, we're wishing you the best and we're hoping for a full recovery. And you know what? Don't listen to them, man. Maybe someday you'll get back up on your feet and we would love to see it. So on behalf of the entire hockey world, we are pulling for you out there. But on a bit of a lighter note, we will move along and take a look at the National Hockey League. Because right now there is some very exciting headlines going on across the National Hockey League. Reaching the halfway point of this NHL season, as we mentioned in the opening, the Chicago Blackhawks still remain undefeated in regulation, currently nursing an 11-game win streak, 24-game point streak. And these guys can just do no wrong.
21-0-3. Crazy. They're 10-0-0. They've won 10 games in a row now.
11.
10. Oh, crap. 11. My bad. I can count, though. Anyhow.
Okay.
So 11-0-0 in their last 10. There you go.
11-0-0 in their last 10. That is even better.
Exactly. They're on an incredible streak. You know, you're getting... getting performances from everyone. You've got one first line, three second lines, solid goaltending, first and second level. I mean, there's just...
Well, that is really the thing, is that depth. And that's what we talked about last week, and it feels like we're kind of kicking a dead horse here, but it's a week later and they're still undefeated. I mean, if any team had lost last Thursday when we were on the air and was now undefeated, they'd be pretty darn pleased with that week. They would have felt like they had something to hang their hat on. And now, I mean, this is ridiculous. Let's call this what this is. This is unheard of. This is unprecedented. I can't recall in my lifetime seeing anything like this.
No.
This is the Montreal Maroons of the 19-teens. I mean, this is a level of dominance that we just don't see in pro sports. I mean, this is crazy.
It is crazy, and it's almost taking away from some of the other great performances we're seeing of late, too.
Oh, it is.
I mean, you've got, Anaheim, who's second in the West. They're 7-1-2 in their last 10.
Well, 16-3-3 overall, yeah. And not getting any attention.
Nope, none whatsoever. Habs are doing great, you know, 6-1-3 in their overall. Last. Even, you know, Toronto and Washington are both at 7-3. LA's at 8-2. And, you know, you're barely hearing anything about it. Even we're barely hearing anything about it because all the talk is about Chicago.
Well, that's it. And especially here on the East Coast, when we get the West Coast news, it is almost exclusively the top chunk is going to these Chicago Blackhawks. Is there anything in your mind over the course of these first 24 games that has stood out as the reason that they've been able to put this together? I mean, it's obviously... The answer is consistency.
Consistency and depth. It's every single player of that team showing up and just playing. They were behind last night. They came back. You know, they've faced adversity, you know. Luckily, so far, they've stayed healthy, you know, knock on wood. As long as they can stay healthy and just keep showing up.
They lost Sharp 2 days ago to an injury.
True,
But, of course, now they're also getting a big Hoss back. I mean, Hossa's coming back into the fold and should be ready to go for tomorrow night's game.
Losing names like Sharp and Hossa, yet still continuing to be able to do it, just goes to show you the depth and the consistency these guys have.
Well, and that's it. I mean, if you look at the last game that these Chicago Blackhawks played against the Colorado Avalanche, I mean, losing by a goal in the third period, the captain... Jonathan Toews comes in and scores shorthanded to tie the game in the third period. And Daniel Carcillo, the car bomb, scores with 49 seconds left to give them the win.
Yes.
You're finding improbable moments at the game to pull miracles out of their hat. And it's that sort of intangible that really creates a champion. I mean, when you're looking at, you said goaltending comes in from two levels. Everyone's talking about Corey Crawford sitting at 11-0-3 right now and how fantastic he's been. Nobody seems to be mentioning that Ray Emery is currently 10-0-0. And right now at this very second, has the most consecutive wins to start an NHL season ever.
Ray Emery.
Ever. Ray Emery. He's the backup goaltender, is currently having the best start to a season in recorded statistical history. Now, this is a guy who, the last time that they won the Stanley Cup, the last time the Chicago Blackhawks won a Stanley Cup was in June of 2010. Mm-hmm. In April of 2010, Ray Emery was undergoing a six-hour bone graft on his hip. He actually only has one bone in his left leg from the knee to the ankle, whereas every other professional hockey player on earth has two. He is running on a single fibula right now, which is absolutely incredible. Doctors were worried that he would never be able to walk properly again. So for him to walk back into the National Hockey League, get that contract that he got with the Anaheim Ducks to come in and play very admirably in relief of Jonas Hiller, and then not be offered a contract, walk back in the door to the Chicago Blackhawks, and since that day, he is 16-0-3 in the city of Chicago. He has never lost a game in Chicago as a Chicago Blackhawk.
That's nuts.
That is insane. I mean, absolutely insane. From a guy who was not supposed to walk normally. He was never going to make it back to the NHL. He's literally on 1.5 legs.
And he's currently sitting fifth in goaltenders for goals against at 2.02, 925 save percent.
I mean, spectacular.
Awesome.
10-0-0, and he's your backup.
Well,
but I do think that the success of the Chicago Blackhawks club is exactly where you pointed to immediately, which is the depth. I think it has to be that. And that's what's been missing from this team over the last 2 years. when you look at that team that made the championship run 30 months ago, by the time that team played the first game of the next season, they had lost Bufflin, Versteeg, Ladd, Thomas Kopecky, Troy Brower, Ben Eager, John Madden, Adam Burrish, Colin Frazier. All of these guys walked out the door. Nine starting members of your Stanley Cup roster are gone immediately. And all of a sudden, we've got guys walking in the door. You've got Victor Stahlberg, who is the new Chris Versteeg. You've got guys like Marcus Kruger, Brandon Saad stepping up after. You must have heard me make fun of him a few games into the season because this guy now had six points in his last five games. I mean, skating alongside Jonathan Toews doesn't hurt the cause, but that's pretty impressive. And as we mentioned, you've got guys, Daniel Carcillo has a goal, and he scored it with 49 seconds left in a tie game.
Way to pick your time.
He's picking his moments, and they're finding that depth. They're finding all of those X factors that they've been missing for the last couple of years, and they're really hitting that perfect part of their cycle at the perfect moment. Coached well, they're led well, their superstars are better than any other team's superstars, save for maybe Detroit, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'd say they're better than Detroit.
Oh, they're better.
Oh, do you?
Well,
I don't know, man. I mean, at this point, if you compare apples and apples?
Yeah, superstar to superstar, though. I mean, team to team, obviously, I will take the Chicago Blackhawks. Right now, I don't know if I take Toews and Kane over Datsyuk and Zetterberg. It's close. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
It's close. I definitely take Sharp over Bertuzzi. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
So, this Chicago team, all these wonderful things I had to say about them, I still think they lose in the first round.
That'd be awful.
I do. That's how it's going to go down. I feel like that number 8 team is going to sneak in because this season is going to be so intense right down to the wire with these 3-point games and a shortened season. I genuinely feel like whoever gets that 8 seed is going to have to be on fire to get there. And Chicago may not have been really challenged. I mean, they're going to clinch a playoff spot like by the time I finish this sentence. It's
yeah,
ridiculous.
You've got 2 points separating 4th and 10th right now. And
exactly.
I mean, it's going to stay tight like that all season.
The shortened season, the 3-point games. It's going to make for a hell of a race.
Yep.
All right. Cool. So who else is red hot right now? We've talked about the Anaheim Ducks.
Yep.
As we just mentioned, 16-3-3, 7-1-2 in their last 10, 9-1 at home, and nobody's talking about them.
No, you know, they've scored one less goal than the Hawks. You know, it's plus 17 goal differential. They've been scoring in 60 times. They're playing solid hockey. Again,
yep.
It's coming all around. But they've just been completely eclipsed by the team that's one above them in the Western Conference.
And realistically, isn't that the perfect position to be in?
Yeah, do it
if
quietly.
You've got that hot young goaltender. You've got, hey, you want to talk about superstars up front. How about Getzlaf, Perry, Bobby Ryan, Solani and Saku Koivu.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Because not only do you have, you know, young, exciting firepower, but you've got veteran presence, guys who've been there and done that, who can, you know, just get that, you know, that cool-headed, level-headedness that you need at certain points in the season.
Oh, absolutely. And a lot of Stanley Cup rings on that team.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at, you know, Getzlaf, Perry. Wouldn't you like to see Koivu get one?
Solani, I would love to see
obviously. You know, the good Reverend Lovejoy back in his Pittsburgh days, of course, getting to skate the Stanley Cup.
I still remember seeing Lovejoy watching 24/7 the Penguins when Lovejoy took that puck to the face.
Oh.
And you see on the plane back, his head, he had a second head. It was like a Siamese twin or conjoined twin right to the side of his face, man. It was huge. They were laughing at him on the plane. Oh, man, that kid. I think that was his first game, too, with them or something like that. It was his first call. Oh. It was just...
Yeah.
Tremendously swollen face.
Hard work smuggling golf balls, eh? And you know who else is red hot?
The Canadians?
The Canadiens de Montréal.
Le Blanc et Rouge.
Oh, buddy, how long has it been since the Montreal Canadiens have been sitting in first place halfway through a season?
For more than a couple games, especially. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. I mean,
absolutely.
Claude Julien's comments aside, the Habs are fantastic. They're great. They're a fast, exciting team to watch. And
getting flashbacks of the 2009 season, where they just took everything by storm. As we mentioned, you know, just before the show here on air, we got a little guy that's all heart wearing number 11.
Yep.
We got a big Russian sniper wearing 27.
Yep.
We got Ryder back on the wing. We got Soup back on the blue line. Bouillon's back there. It's a blast from the past.
Yeah, it's great, man. And it's just, hockey's fun to watch again. You know, they're not talking about, they're not, you know, stringing coaches out to dry. They're not, there's not awful hockey talk. It's just a bunch of people that are enjoying watching the Habs. Sure, there's stuff you can complain about.
Well, there always is.
Exactly, it's hockey, right? There's always going to be stuff here and there. But on the whole, the Canadiens are just fun to watch again.
And you know what's fantastic, because we are not talking about him? Is P.K. Subban.
Yep.
P.K. Subban has stepped up.
Getting it done. That's
he
it.
Has played his role perfectly, put up points consistently, not taken any dumb penalties for the most part, played very well in his own end, made the first passes out of his own end very well, very responsibly, and absolutely no personnel issues.
Yeah. Yeah, he's, well, because again, I think some part of that is maturity too, right? You know?
Oh, I think that's a big part of it is,
yeah,
PK realizing the opportunity he's got and how good this team really is.
Yeah.
When he had to sit out for those first stretch of games during the season and saw this team catch fire without him, I think that sort of said something to him.
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe they don't need me as much as I thought they needed me. Maybe it's my job to come in here and keep these wheels moving instead of come in here and be the engine that moves the wheels.
And I think there is also a fine example of why the bridge contract was the perfect thing to give him. You give him a good, he got a good contract for sure, you know, like,
oh,
it's,
sure.
It's what, it's maybe even a little more than he deserved, but in any case, he's got 2 years to show that, you know, if he really wants that Drew Doughty money, he's got to work his ass off and become a leader on the team. And I think that's,
yeah,
what he's going to do.
And I very much agree with you. I guess my only stipulation coming out of that whole situation, the sticking point for me, was that Drew Doughty did get that money. And when the market has been set, it creates a very difficult situation for the agents, the general managers, and the players.
Mm.
When Lombardi signed Doughty to that contract, it really skewed the market for young,
certainly,
up-and-coming defensemen for probably 5 to 8 years in the future.
Yeah, but Montreal's done it right. They did the same thing with Patches and the same thing with Price.
Hey, and I completely agree that it's the right way to do it, but it made me nervous that PK might walk.
Yeah, of
because
course.
The precedent has been set, and therefore somebody, a.k.a. the Philadelphia Flyers, a.k.a. the New York Rangers, you know, you look up and down the lineup of teams that have the money to spend and could really use a premium defenseman. And it pretty much is the list of teams who have the money to spend, because who can't use a premium defenseman?
Yep.
It just made me nervous was all. I'm very happy with the way it worked out, but I probably would have given him more money just to make sure that he was there.
But he'll get his. So
he, oh, I
know,
agree.
But, you know, we talk about the Habs doing well. And, again, these guys, it's an issue of depth now. Last
oh,
year, the same. If you look down their scoring, the scoring chart there, the team roster, everybody but Yannick Weber, who's only played one game, has registered a point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're getting it from everywhere. Patches is up at the top with 20 points, 8 goals, 12 assists.
And what I also like is that Patch Reddy is the only guy on that team over a point per game. And they're still offensively dominant.
Yep.
They're not getting the Crosby, the Malkin performances. Instead, they're getting a goal here or there from Bocanic, Desharnais. I mean, Markov is fourth in the team in scoring, and Subban is fifth.
Yep.
That's crazy. Especially when you consider Gallagher's having a great year.
Subban's seven.
Oh, seven?
Yeah. Markov's fifth, Subban seventh. You got Patches, Ryder, Plek, Desharnais, Markov, Gallagher, and Subban.
Oh, see, my issue is that I am actually on the Montreal Canadiens official website, so Ryder's stats do not count because only points accumulated as a Montreal Canadian count towards these.
Makes sense.
So I have got my standings as Pacioretty, Plekanec, Desharnais, followed by Markov and Subban.
What's Ryder at? He hasn't scored a goal yet, but I think he's about a point per game.
Four assists in four games,
yeah,
but unfortunately, very out of character for him, a -2 through his first four games.
But again, that's just him adjusting to the system and stuff. He hasn't necessarily found his place yet.
And that's exactly it. This is a very different Montreal team than the one he left five or six seasons ago. Michel Therrien, and you know what? I'm just going to continue to eat crow on this because the guy showed up and did his job. The guy showed up and delivered everything he needed to deliver. I asked him specifically before this season to answer some questions. He answered them.
Yep.
I'm satisfied. I don't have any more bad things to say. Look, I'll be the first to admit
when my inklings, my gut instinct was wrong. I didn't trust Michel Therrien. I would have hired Mark Crawford.
Yep.
And looking at the situation as it unfolded in the same position again, I would hire Mark Crawford.
Yeah.
That being said,
he's done it. He's doing all right.
Listen, they knew something I didn't know. They got the job done. Michel Therrien is doing a fantastic job, and I could not be more pleased with him as a coach of my Montreal Canadiens.
Yep. All right, so let's move on from the Habs because we don't want to...
We're at the halfway point already.
The halfway point.
Let's remind everybody at home, they are listening to Off the Crossbar Live, presented by BackSportsPage.com and OffTheCrossbar.com. You can catch us right here on Blog Talk Radio every Thursday evening at 8 o'clock. And, of course, available for download, podcast, and... Well, we're putting out vinyl. I think we've got some...
Anything you want, we'll get it for you.
If
you want to listen to us, we will accommodate.
AM broadcasts.
Yeah, AM, FM, XM.
Smoke signals if Jim Emsworth is listening.
Big
whatever
blue.
You need. We got it. We will find you if you want to listen. All right, so coming into the second half of the season, coming into the second half of the show, let's tell everybody how wrong we were. One division at a time. And let's start right where we already are, shall we? Adam, tell me who's doing what in the Atlantic.
All right.
In the Northeast.
Well, do you want to know what we called?
Yeah, let's start there.
Okay, so we called, James and myself called the Rangers to be in first place for the end of the season.
Sorry, I said Northeast. I switched mine.
You said Atlantic.
Yeah, and then I said Northeast.
Okay, so.
Hey, it's live radio.
So, in the Northeast... James and I called Boston, although I wanted to call the Habs. I just figured I'd get slapped in the face. But then you came to my rescue and called the Habs, and Shazam, you are right.
Thank you
so,
very
so
much.
So far, you're one for one.
So far, I'm one for one, and I will see you later. Well, let's just talk about the Northeast for a few minutes while we're here. I was right, but I was also dead wrong. And let's put that into some perspective. I predicted that the Montreal Canadiens would win the division on the strength of my prediction that Boston would crap the bed. I genuinely believe that Tuukka Rask would not be able to handle the consistent workload.
Turns out...
he's doing pretty damn well.
Yeah.
I honestly pegged Montreal to be the best of the rest. I thought Montreal, Toronto, Ottawa, and Buffalo would all be in play.
Now,
as
keep in mind,
turns
though,
out...
But at this point in time, also Boston does have three games in hand as well. So
of course they do.
If this were next week, I could be right.
oh, absolutely, no, and that's exactly my point. Is that Boston is not experiencing the collapse that I had predicted.
No, and Rask has been solid. But the thing is, Boston just can't really keep up.
And
with the faster teams,
and that does tend to be the issue. You see Claude Julien mentioning that. He feels like the Montreal Canadiens dive too much. Well, here's the thing about diving on a consistent basis. Maybe your guys are having to reach out with the sticks a little too much because they can't keep up with the speed down the wings. That is when you see the tripping calls and the hooking calls start to really accumulate. And that's kind of what we're seeing.
Here's a random tidbit from the Northeast as well. The Maple Leafs have yet to go to a shootout at all. So,
Interesting.
Yeah, there are only two other teams as well. All in the East.
And something that, looking at that division, how about those Toronto Maple Leafs?
Yeah, like I said earlier, what are they,
single point behind the Boston Bruins.
Yeah.
Again, four games in hand, but sitting at 30 points, sitting in a playoff position.
7-3-0 in their last 10.
And 7-3-0 in their last 10 without a whole lot of offensive flair.
No, there's nothing exciting about the Leafs. There really isn't. They're boring
teams.
Except
the wins.
Yeah, they just keep pulling out wins.
And for many, many years, we saw a Leafs team that was very exciting to watch.
But couldn't win.
Yeah.
So I guess as a Leafs fan, you're fine to take the boring Habs-like hockey that, we were watching for the last little while and getting the wins rather than, seeing, exciting, except it's exciting to see them get 11 goals scored against them. And...
Well, that's the problem with having Darcy Tucker on the ice. I mean, let's call a spade with that one. All right, moving along, let's get into that Atlantic division.
All right, so James and I both called the Rangers, who are currently sitting in third. And across the desk, K-Ross called Pittsburgh, who is currently in first. So.
All right, so I'm seriously leaving after this one because I know for a fact
you're two for two.
I don't have any right to be on here. So, you know what? Pittsburgh, I think just realistically proving what they need to prove. This is one of the very few divisions where I was actually just bang on correct, I think. I said Pittsburgh's got the best players in the league. They're going to win a bunch of games. And you can't argue against that in a shortened season. I think that's what we're seeing pan out here. I mean, 6-4-0 at home, not spectacular. 9-4-0 on the road, not necessarily spectacular. But picking up the points and winning games where they need to win them.
Yep. Sid's healthy and is being Sidney Crosby, exactly what is needed.
And overcoming the Malkin concussion,
yep.
He's back in the lineup,
yep.
No problem. James Neal is, in fact, the real deal. They look great. And much as I predicted in the Atlantic, the New York Rangers, slow out of the gate, starting to string themselves together now. I really hope that they can make a run
they
of
just suck on the road.
They are
9-4-1 at home and 2-4-1 on the road. Like, yeah, guys, come on.
I mean, what we're seeing is it's the same old Rangers story. They spend a bunch of money. They go get every free agent they want. They land it. They get picked as the favorite. Oh, the difference is that the Yankees win.
Yeah, I guess.
The difference is that the Yankees are accused of buying championships and then they win championships. The Rangers are accused of buying championships and then miss the playoffs every second year.
Mm.
I mean, remember when they won the Olli Jokinen sweepstakes a few years back? Wasn't that supposed to be the big salvation, the big saving grace of the franchise that was going to help them make that playoff run? And, you know, I was really excited about Rick Nash. I had him pegged as a Hart Trophy candidate,
yep.
Coming in and playing alongside Brad Richards and Marian Gaborik. And we're just not seeing that right now.
No, there's nothing overly exciting from him. I mean, you know, he's playing all right. He's not, you know, horrible, but he's not...
No, Nash is doing okay.
Yeah.
But then everybody's sort of inconsistent around him.
I just hope they finally see Nash surrounded by talent would just make Nash thrive and just, you know...
And it could be a matter of chemistry as well, right? Listen, when you look at this bench, and we talk about this, I think 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago we had this conversation... John Tortorella, maybe on the hot seat. He is a love him or hate him kind of coach, and right now this team is not effective beneath him.
No.
He obviously can win Stanley Cups when he gets everybody firing. We saw him do it in Tampa Bay with all those superstars on that team. He's not getting it done right now.
No. I mean, I should note that, I mean, from my previous comments on Nash, he is first on the team in scoring. He's got 7 goals, 11 assists, 18 points. But, again, it's just...
He's
what can Torts do, though, to get more out of these guys? What
leave. I mean, and I listen, I
but
I
who, okay, who could coach them better? Or is this just a situation of pretty much anybody coming in being like, okay, well, you three...
Well, anybody.
Score some
and
goals.
That's what happens when you have a very abrasive coach, is they will very quickly wear out their welcome.
So he's lost the room.
But they will... It's hard for me to say that because there is no media access to the New York Rangers room. Because of the pressure and because of the way that John Tortorella sets up his team, we would never know. All I can say is that looking at the product on the ice, there are more guys out there coming in flat than there should be. And I know for a fact that with an abrasive hockey coach, you are either getting results or you are not. I mean, let's put it this way. Can you name me a better coach in your mind over the course of our lifetime, where we're both in the 30-year range, than Mike Keenan? Maybe Pat Burns?
Pat Burns is pretty awesome.
Okay. So needless to say,
Scotty Bowman is around.
Mike Keenan, among the absolute most elite hockey coaches we have seen in our lifetime growing up with the game, correct?
Yeah.
Think of how many teams we've seen him coach.
Yeah.
Because he was known as Iron Mike, the fist of rule. This guy.
Yeah, he got in there,
go
got
in
done,
there,
whipped him into shape.
Got the job done.
And then you pass it on to someone else who doesn't need to be
commandant. I mean, he's the Alex. The coaches like that are the Alex Ovechkins of coaching. They go out, balls to the wall, full speed ahead, up and down the ice. They're going to give you everything they've got, and then somebody's going to figure it out. And then it's going to get tricky, and you're going to have to outthink it. And then it's time to move along.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that John Tortorella is there. I'm saying that from what I see on the ice, it looks like that may be it. Because obviously, Tortorella's not going to say anything to the media.
Hmm.
And his players don't turn on him. Because I have a feeling he would punch them in the face. He's that kind of guy.
Bag skates. 4 in the morning.
All right, let's move through some of these other divisions quite quickly.
All right, Southeast.
Southeast.
yourself and I called Tampa, currently sitting in third place. James had Carolina, who is currently sitting in first in the Southeast.
And I think we are finally seeing from these Carolina Hurricanes what James saw and what James managed to convince me of shortly after I had made my pick. So good on you, James, if you are at home listening right now. Just well played. You saw something in that chemistry that I did not see, and you are absolutely right. This team is clicking.
Yeah, 6-point lead in the next Winnipeg, Tampa, Washington, Florida. I mean, no surprise that Florida's in the bottom, but it is kind of surprising that Washington is there with them.
Not for me.
I didn't think Washington was going to win the division by any means, but I didn't think they'd be
Washington just
garbage.
Keeps getting worse.
It's just sad, though, and it sucks for Adam Oates, too. Because I don't really think that it's necessarily his fault entirely. They're just
This has to do with the fact that they're letting guys like Mike Knuble walk out the door.
You know, they need
they're losing Alex Seven. They're losing. Now there's a fifth. That might be the best idea I've heard in a very long time.
Whip them into shape.
I actually really like that idea. They also need a big free agent signing. You can't keep letting guys walk out the door.
No.
And that's what you're getting is guys just leaving. I mean, Semin's gone, and yeah, you replaced him with what, Ribeiro? Like, you keep trading down. You keep trading in nine and getting eight and a half back.
Get Flapper or Perry out there.
They don't have anything to offer.
No,
free agency. It's a problem.
If they let him go to free agency,
if they let him go to free agency, absolutely. They're not going to let him go to free agency. They're too valuable. Too valuable. All right, so I had Tampa Bay winning that division. They started red hot. And then faltered.
I still think Tampa can come back and get it together.
They do as well.
They have too much experience and just solid hockey players to not give them a run for their money. 21 points right now. They're too talented.
Right
on the road.
And they're not great. Exactly. And that's – listen, Stamkos is going to turn them around. He is on fire. When you've got a guy firing like that, you're going to win some games that you have no business winning. And that's the kind of thing that can spark some momentum. Let's hope that they get there so that I don't look like a jackass in 2014's time. Let's move into the Western Conference, Adam.
On to the West one.
Let's go to the Central.
Central Division. Hey, this is one that I got right. My one out of six I got right, as well, James. We both called Chicago.
And
hot first.
Damn, were you right.
Yeah, well, I kind of knew. You know, it was a feeling that I had, and I went with it.
I do remember you saying, I don't think Chicago's going to lose ever again.
I think that came up. Something I'd say. And you had Nashville, which would have also made sense. I mean, you know, the strong goaltending, they had all sorts of greatness in Nashville. They just don't have any greatness in Nashville.
I'll tell you exactly what's happening in Nashville right now is their defense is a one-trick pony. I love Hal Gill to death.
Hal Gill?
But he's no Ryan Suter. And when you have a team that is built around a defensive philosophy like the Nashville Predators are, I thought they were deep enough to sustain that loss. I thought the team system was going to be enough to carry them through. It has not been. I mean, 9-9-5, technically a 500 hockey club. James is yelling at his speaker somewhere in the world right now because that team has won 9 games and lost 14. So I guess I just plain wasn't right, and I got a pretty good feeling they won't catch Chicago.
Makes me sad that Hal Gill is the only guy on the team that doesn't have any points. I mean, it is Hal Gill, so it's not that huge of a shock.
Yeah.
But it makes me sad nonetheless.
It's hard to score points while you're laying down in your own crease.
But it's surprising because he's only getting 12 minutes and 43 seconds of ice time a game. Like, I know he's getting old, but...
Well, the reason is because of that shortened season. They're saving him for a playoff run if he gets there. I mean, that's what Hal Gill is for. That's when Hal Gill will eat up the big minutes is when... Again, it's very important to lay down in the crease. When that's his time to shine, when you've got a lead late, he's the guy you want on the ice.
At this point,
and they haven't had many late leads.
No.
All right, let's look at the Pacific, where the aforementioned Anaheim Ducks are red hot at 16-3-3. The Stanley Cup defending champion Los Angeles Kings are on the charge. 8-2-0 in their last 10. Still 9 points behind because they did start so slowly and Anaheim started so strong.
Only division that was unanimous. We all called the Kings. So we're getting there. Second place right now.
Not going to get there. 9 points over 24 games in the 3-point game era is very
difficult. What goes up
difficult.
Must come down. Anaheim is just playing great hockey right now. LA is getting back to great hockey. They weren't for a while. 7-1-1 at home, though.
I mean,
they're still bringing it on for their fans.
It really is that Stanley Cup hangover to a T. Or maybe it's just the character of this team, because it is, again, exactly what we saw last year, was the LA Kings sitting well outside of a playoff position at Christmas time last year.
Yep.
And then absolutely, far and away, the best hockey team from Christmas to the end of the season.
So Easter is Christmas this year, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I guess we will. Bring them back. And
finally, the Northwest, I guess. Or do you have any more comments?
Well, I would just like to offer my condolences to one Eric O'Brien on what I thought as well was going to be a fantastic year for the Dallas Stars.
I thought
that they were going to be the dark horse coming out.
But in their defense, they're only 2 points behind L.A. I mean, it's not that horrible.
But they're not just moving the right direction and sustaining some key injuries. And again, the West is so tight. You're looking at a team that is 11-9-2, a 500 team no matter how you cut it, a winning team by technical NHL standards. They could still do it, and especially with those veterans in the lineup. I don't like seeing Whitney hurt. I think that is what killed them. They really, I mean, you got a point per game player out of the lineup in a very short season on a team that's stacked with veteran talent. Chemistry is a huge issue. And I think that's probably been the Achilles heel for the Dallas Stars thus far. All right, let's get on to the Northwest.
Northwest. James and I called for Minnesota, which is close.
Not bad.
And you call Colorado. I guess it's ever. You called Colorado.
And I will have a very good excuse for that in our upcoming segment. Look, this is a Colorado.
Not been a lucky year for Colorado.
Vancouver, everybody wants to know what's wrong with Vancouver. My God, Kessler's hurt. They're not playing great hockey. They can't pick a damn goaltender. And they, once again, are still in first place in their division. They just keep winning games. The hypochondriac Canuck fan is the new Canadian stereotype in my head. I'm so sick of hearing everybody across the NHL ask what's wrong with the Vancouver Canucks. Not a damn thing. Can we move on now?
Yep.
Like, this is a very good hockey team who wins a lot of hockey games. They have two very good goaltenders. They have five or six very talented offensive players, four very good defensemen, and a coach who knows what he's doing.
Yep.
There's nothing wrong with Vancouver. They just have a cloud over them.
But, so if you want to go back and check out the original predictions we made, that was in our January 10th, 2013 episode. And every single one of the episodes are available on the Back Sports page podcasts through iTunes. Or you can just download the podcast app on your iPad, iTunes, iPhone, whatever, and check them all out for free.
Very nice.
Hell yeah.
All right, so for our next segment here, we have titled this one, Late to the Dance. And you are, once again, listening to Off the Crossbar Live. And we are going to get into a couple of players each. I think we're going to take two each here. We're going to go very quickly through because time is becoming an issue. We are not used to this one-hour format yet. guys who have missed a significant chunk of time during the first half of this season, maybe currently out, maybe very recently on the lam. Guys who have been missing from their clubs for a little while that we think are going to have a significant impact.
Or who may be missing for a little while.
In the second half. Exactly. Adam, I know you're on the goalie train on this one. No surprise there.
Yeah.
Who's your first guy? Let's go.
I got to go with Marty Brodeur. He's been on the IR since February 24th with back issues. So it hasn't been that long he's away. But the Devils are 1-3 since he's out. Jersey's still second in the Atlantic Division, so they might do all right. But Marty Brodeur, especially in a season like this where you can play him almost all games and still make sure he's got legs for the playoffs, it's going to be big for them to not have him. You know, Brodeur can do a 48-game season with his eyes closed, barely breaking a sweat and still going to the playoffs.
Yeah, it's hard with that density, but if there ever was a goaltender capable of doing it, he's your guy. He's going to play 40 to 42 of those games if he's healthy.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that you need to consider when you look at this New Jersey Devils team is, okay, Brodeur's hurt for a little bit, so we go to the backup. the backup is also 40 years old. So can the Moose, Johan Hedberg, sustain 5, 6, 8 games consecutively and still have anything left in his tank? Because we know that Brodeur can do it at an advanced age. We've seen it happen time in, time again. We always write Brodeur off in the preseason, and then he comes back strong. It's kind of what – it's an annual rite of fall in the hockey world. But can Johan Hedberg do it? That's going to be a key hinge for this New Jersey Devils club.
It really is. Who's the other goalie? Keith Kincaid or something like that. I mean, so...
Yeah, who?
You don't have...
I mean, I'm sure he's good, but...
He's in the NHL, so he's good.
You want a goaltend for the Devils. You got some big skates to fill.
Yeah. So, I mean, it remains to be seen. Can Hedberg do it until Brodeur gets back and healthy? Because you know they're not going to rush Brodeur back either, especially with the back issue.
And especially not sitting in a playoff position.
Right. So, you know, as long as they're sitting pretty... Brodeur is going to be taking the rest and just making sure he's good and healthy.
Good points. And I actually look forward to following that storyline quite a bit and seeing how the, of course, last year's finalists managed to fight through an injury to
a key.
Potentially the greatest goaltender who's ever laced up a pair of skates. All right, moving along. I have selected for my late to the dance comeback player of the second half. I'm calling it right now. Gabriel Landeskog, and a key component to why those Colorado Avalanche are not in the position I thought they would be in, as well as the fact that Ryan O'Reilly kept holding out significantly longer than I thought he would, waiting for that deal to come in place.
He is an important Landeskog in their gears, so I mean, yeah.
All right, so Landeskog coming back off of 11 games missed due to concussion. He came back late last month and has been saying and doing all the right things. Landeskog, last year, this offseason, named the youngest captain in NHL history, coming off of a rookie season that saw him post 22 goals, 30 assists for 52 points over a full 82 games played. And again, James is at home yelling at his speakers. He did not deserve the Calder Trophy. Nugent Hopkins had a better point per game. But as I said at the end of the year, rather have the guy who shows up all the time.
Yep.
I'm not saying Nugent Hopkins is not a better hockey player. I'm saying over the course of last season, I'd rather have the guy who played all the games.
Yeah, and I mean, Landeskog has been, you know, he was playing, just under 19 minutes a game in his 11 games. 2 goals, 3 assists. He was a +5. I mean, he's important to the team, man. He's their captain.
He is exceptionally important. And I think another factor that's going to have a huge impact on his second half is the return of Ryan O'Reilly. We don't hear the name much out here on the East Coast, and especially because he is relatively new to the National Hockey League coming off of that entry-level deal. But he is a key component to the offense and a huge missing factor, easily one of the best players on the team.
Another almost 18 minutes a game this guy plays.
Well, exactly. A monster. So when you add that into the kind of talent that, you know, Matt Duchene, Milan Hejduk, all these guys that they've got out in Colorado, the potential is there to turn it around, particularly with strong goaltending from Semyon Varlamov. So I do predict the 6'1", 207-pound Swede, who was the second overall draft pick just 2 years ago, to have a significant impact on the second half of this NHL season. And unfortunately, I have got some bad news. I'm going to have to cut you off before we get to your prediction that Cam Ward is going to be there. We are sitting on approximately 6 minutes to go, and we have to get to Stompin' Tom. So I will give you a little bit of quick lip service. Cam Ward does need to come back strong. He will be an impact player, of course.
Especially considering the backup goalie is injured as well.
Exactly. Also missing Dan Ellis. Justin Peters getting the start. A very good backup on most teams in the National Hockey League. So they're in okay hands.
And in the second intermission, the Habs and the Canes are tied up at 2. So, I mean, not too
he's
bad.
He's doing all right.
Yeah.
My other one, of course, was, of course, I haven't told you anything yet. Why would you know? Joffrey Lupo will make an impact when he comes back. The Leafs are sitting in a playoff spot. He may not break that top line of Bozak, Kessel, and JVR. He will see second line minutes and will make an impact. Look for the Leafs to climb into the second half, top half of the Eastern Conference standings. But now it is time for... an unfortunate tribute. As we mentioned off the top of the show, Canadian country music legend, Canadian hockey legend, and a very, very large part of my own childhood, Stompin' Tom Connors, passed away yesterday at the age of 77 years. We would also like to pass along condolences to friends, family, and the entire hockey world, who it was really, Stompin' Tom was quite the influence, was he not?
Absolutely, man. I mean, the guy was prolific in his, I mean, most Americans probably have never heard of him beyond, you know, the good old hockey game, which you will get a taste of later.
Yeah, but this man, you may not even know the man's name, but you will know the song.
He's written over 300 songs, 4 dozen albums, 4 million copies sold. I mean, prolific in his writing. It was great, man. He
absolutely.
He belted out songs. They were always fun, good to listen to. He won 6 Juno Awards, which coincidentally he returned because he was also a very good character and didn't really...
Absolutely. He refused induction into the Canadian Country Music Hall of Fame, refused 6 Juno Awards, which are essentially...
No, accepted one in return.
And then returned it, and then refused the 5 others. Humble to his last day. Anyone who grew up playing this game in this country knew Stompin' Tom Connors. Adam, when that hockey song plays, what does it take you back to in 60 seconds or less?
Every single other time I've heard it play. It starts to play, you belt it out. It just, you get into it. It brings you into a sports bar, your dad's couch, your best friend's house, whatever. You hear the good old hockey game, you belt it out, and you're with friends, family, and hockey fans. Everywhere.
Absolutely. It is a beer-drinking, boot-stomping hootenanny of a good time. Very quickly, my best memories of the hockey song. CBC Hockey Night in Canada, theme music starts to play. I'm 5 years old. My grandfather calls me in, and I come a-running. And during that first commercial break, he hits mute. And every single time I'm sitting on his knee, and he's doing that knee bounce. Hello out there. We're on the air. It's hockey night tonight. And it is beautiful. It is fantastic. Our sincerest condolences, and the world of hockey is a lesser place as of this very day. So we will observe a quick moment of silence for the late, great Stompin' Tom Connors, and then we're going to let him play us out one last time. So we'll talk to you next week.
Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Second period, where players dash with skates aflash, the home team trails behind, but they grab the puck and go bursting up, and they're down across the line. They storm the crease like bumblebees, they travel like a burning flame. We see them slide the puck inside, it's a 1-1 hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Third period, last game in the playoffs, too. Oh, take me where the hockey players face off down the rink, and the Stanley Cup is all filled up for the champs who win the drink. Now the final flick of a hockey stick and a one gigantic scream. The puck is in, the home team wins the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
That's it! That is Stompin' Tom Connors with the good old hockey game. Rest in peace, Tom. We'll miss you.
I'm K. Ross Reed for Adam O. Wells. This has been Off the Crossbar Live. And we'll see you next week.